World Cup to Australia.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Cricket Tonight, the post-World Cup podcast. Welcoming Pralab Gupta.
Hi, everyone.
Welcoming Gov.
Yeah, that was a pretty emotional moment for me to listen to that intro for the last time in a while. I'm going to miss it.
I won't.
You won't.
I'll miss that more than the World Cup itself.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and me. So, guys, the end of the World Cup. We were there at the World Cup final, and before we start things off, here are the winning sounds. Yep, that was Australia winning the World Cup against New Zealand. Australia ended up winning by 7 wickets in a game that wasn't all that close. We were there at the game, and Pralab, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, normally you expect the World Cup final to be the pinnacle of all events where different moments can determine the winner for this match. But when we looked at the opening over, even Brendan McCullum coming in and charging down the pitch the first or second ball and eventually being clean bowled by Stark, for me it was just one way where New Zealand struggled, they lost wickets and clusters and ended up with a very subpar total. So the final was pretty, look, in the end it was pretty boring, I'd say. But most World Cup finals generally have been as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you look back at the past few World Cup finals, especially the ones that Australia has won, you know, the first World Cup victory, well, ignoring the victory in 87, which happened a year before I was born, you know, in 99 they smashed Pakistan, in 2003 they smashed India, in 2007 they smashed Sri Lanka in probably the worst World Cup ever, and this game as well, you know, I'm not sure why we expected anything different. New Zealand had a great tournament and they surprised everyone. They came into this tournament with high expectations, but they sure surpassed everyone's expectations anyway. But it was quite disappointing to see that, you know, they didn't really come with their A game. I know they had quite a lot of things stacked up against them. You know, this is the first match in Australia in years. They had no warm-up games. And the grounds they've been playing on in New Zealand were very small compared to the MCG. But even then, I was sort of expecting and hoping for a more spirited performance by the bowlers and batsmen. But unfortunately, they didn't turn up.
Yeah, it's interesting. I thought, as Pralab was saying at the start, it was surprising to see Callum McCullum play like that, because he is an aggressive batsman, as we all know. But the shots he was playing, like, it was like he was closing his eyes and just swinging. It didn't look like a real batsman, to be honest. Like, I thought that he'd have at least, you know, some sense to just, you know, watch out Mitchell Stark. He's been the ball of the tournament, and even at the end, he's been sensational, and looking forward to seeing him over the next few years. But yeah, his intent was there. If he goes off, it goes off. But the shots did not look convincing. And it was 3 balls. If he just survived that one over, he survived 5 overs. Who knows what could have happened. And New Zealand, I thought, were, like, we say that it wasn't, you know, things were stacked up against them. But at a point when they were there, it looked like they were making a good total. When Taylor and Elliot were batting together, they formed a good partnership. And it seemed like New Zealand can post, if they make 250, then that's a good score for a World Cup final. But, you know, in the span of 10 balls, Faulkner comes in, takes 2 wickets. And Stark comes in, takes a wicket. And it's basically Vutori and Grant Elliot. And
yeah, I was really impressed by Grant Elliot's performance. You know, he was the most important batsman for New Zealand in the semi-final against South Africa. And he was the most important batsman again. I did feel if he had another guy sticking by him, Ross Taylor scored a 40. But as he has the whole tournament, you know, nothing he's done has been fluid. And when he went out, it wasn't that much of a surprise. And after Ross Taylor went out, there was just a collapse. And, you know, at one point, New Zealand were looking at making 270, 280. And we all had our hopes up. But Grant Elliott seemed like a superhuman. But even by himself, facing up against Australia and Mitchell Stark is too much.
Yeah, look, when I think 3 or 4 of your top 7 make a duck, you know you're not going to make that many runs. So it was pretty disappointing to see New Zealand bat the way they did. I thought, going back to McCullum, he is an aggressive leader and he's been a great captain for New Zealand throughout the entire World Cup, but he sort of went away from his attacking mould. And, you know, there's a difference between attacking for the sake of attacking and picking the right balls to attack, and he failed in that when he batted. But even in the field, there's a good example where they got Finch really early and were on a bit of a momentum run, and there was an odd 4 here and there, and he took out a slip and the next ball he goes straight to second slip where the second slip should have been.
Mm.
So from his captaincy as well, I felt it was pretty poor watching him in the field, and from a batting front, he was pretty poor as well. So it wasn't a very good final for him.
Yeah. We keep bringing up McCollum. I know it's just one wicket, but if you've seen New Zealand's performances this whole World Cup, when McCollum's batted well, New Zealand have played well. When he doesn't bat well, they've had a tendency to collapse. You know, I think the main issue with him is that he doesn't value his wicket enough. You know, he sees himself as a guy who's going to come up. If he scores, it's a bonus. That's the way he approaches his batting this World Cup. And I think he's much better than that. I think he can score a lot of runs if he's just a little bit more patient. And I know we can all talk about this in hindsight. You know, if he had survived that first over and he got his eye in, he could have made a lot of runs. But that's the whole point. You know, if he had just given himself a couple of overs, this whole World Cup final could have been very different.
Another thing that was a bit surprising was New Zealand's bowling, I found. Like, even though it's been New Zealand and there's swinging conditions, I thought the line and length that the bowlers bowled was way different to what they bowled in New Zealand. It wasn't the same brand of exciting, attacking New Zealand bowling that we've seen throughout the whole World Cup. So that was a bit surprising and a bit disappointing. Because even you would think if any team in the World Cup could defend a low target, it'd be New Zealand. And they did. At the start, I guess it looked okay, but it seemed like they got worn down pretty easy. Like, as soon as the partnership started, it was like, oh, okay, we've lost it. But I guess how much can you say about the bowlers when you're defending 180 or something?
Yeah.
And really, you know, the way Australia batted, no risks, is just seemed very easy to them, and they were not under pressure for even 1 minute of the game.
Yeah,
it felt like.
Well, we saw Finch go out. I know all the New Zealand fans were hoping that they'd follow it up with good type bowling, but I think from that point on, for the next 5-10 overs, they didn't bowl a single good ball. This is coming from Trent Bolt, who, in my opinion, was a top 2 or 3 bowler in this whole World Cup. It seemed to me, from where I was sitting, that they sort of gave up. Which was a little bit disappointing. Vettori had an incredible World Cup, and you know he deserves all the applause he gets, but he didn't bowl his best. Salvi wasn't good. Mark Henry wasn't that good as well. So I wouldn't say they gave up. That's a little bit too harsh, but they definitely dropped their shoulders and didn't bring their A game in the second innings.
Definitely. You could see the sort of drop in body language and the signs coming from the New Zealand team, particularly about 8 or 9 overs in. But you're right, Saudi had a really disappointing game. He was all over the park, was getting hit by the Australian players. And I think just New Zealand had a bad day, and maybe the pressure got to got to them and they couldn't step up when required. But on the flip side, let's talk about Australia, because the reality is, you know, even in the game in New Zealand, they almost won that match. New Zealand were probably, I guess, scraped with a victory in the end by a wicket. Australia's won quite convincingly at the MCG. I think there's probably a legitimate argument to make that Australia were easily the best team. I wouldn't say easily, but at least the best team in the entire World Cup.
Yeah, it was kind of similar to India's campaign last World Cup. Australia did have a few slip-ups in the group stages. Against Sri Lanka, they gave up 320+. They lost against New Zealand. But when the quarterfinals came around, they stepped they set their game up a few gears. And no team, whether it was India, Pakistan, or New Zealand, could even come close to them. They had the best bowler in the tournament, Steve Smith, who's in the best form of his life. You know, during the final stage of the tournament, looked like the best player in the world. So, we were saying all along in the group stages, even if this team could figure out their batting lineup and get some consistency, and not collapse like they showed a couple of times in the group stages, they were a force to be reckoned with. And when it came down to it, they had a complete team, and they clearly deserved to win this World Cup.
Yeah, it was interesting because Ravi Shastri was just asked, you know, what was Steve Smith's weakness? You've been in Australia for 4 months, he'll you know it by now. And he goes, I really don't think he has one, but if you know one, tell me. So it'll be good to see Steve Smith, who's going to be the new successor to Clark, you know, in ODIs and potentially test matches when Clark retires from there, to see how he goes in the next few months.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Australia go. As Gov, you said, they're an incredible team right now. And yeah, I think the future is bright for all the players. Other thing is, all the players are so young. Like, aside from the retired players, obviously. I think it's just Mitchell Johnson that's the older generation.
And Clark, obviously, is on the way out.
Clark's probably going. I think Clark's Watson. I don't think Watson will play another World Cup. Haddon's probably out
as well.
But the main core,
the guy I feel bad for is George Bailey, who missed out. I think the only time in history a guy has captained a team in the first game and then didn't play a single game after that. But, you know, as you were saying, it's a young team, and they have a few other guys waiting in the ranks, just waiting for the opportunity. So this team is a force to be reckoned with for the next couple of years, for sure.
Yeah. So Australia win the World Cup. We'll move on from the World Cup final game. We'll talk about the Cricket World Cup in just review overall. What did we think about it? How did we feel?
Yeah, look, overall, there were lots of question marks coming into this World Cup about whether ODI cricket is dead and whether people simply prefer 2020 cricket and does it have a place in the cricketing calendar. And this World Cup's definitely showed that it has a place. People still love it. The crowds were amazing. I think more than 1 million people attended this World Cup, so it's one of the best attended World Cups in history. I had a really enjoyable experience this entire World Cup. I felt it was a good tournament. You can make comments about the way they've structured the groups and the format, but as a whole, I think the World Cup was a big success. It was good to see the different teams in there do well, like Ireland doing quite well. Even Afghanistan getting their first win, it was good to see the associate nations there. England losing was also quite funny. Bangladesh doing really well in this scenario was really good. So it was good to see Bangladesh make their first quarter final, and even South Africa winning their first knockout match. So there's lots of good highlights in this World Cup overall.
Yeah, there weren't too many big surprises or huge upsets this World Cup, apart from the Bangladesh England one, which I wouldn't even say is an upset at this stage, because England's played so badly for so long now in ODIs. But there were still a lot of competitive games. You know, even that first game between Zimbabwe and South Africa, there were teams, whether they were minnows, you know, associate members, or just bottom of the rung, top level teams, if you want to call them that. You know, most games were competitive between, you know, I would say all games competitive. let me backtrack from that. But for the most part, it was entertaining, and yeah, I enjoyed the World Cup thoroughly.
It was definitely entertaining, I found, and yeah, just to be part of the experience was great. Here in Australia, it was incredible, just watching all the teams and hooked to the TV.
And the sad part is, it might take another 16 to 25 years, depending on the schedule, for it to come back here. So we're going to be old and grey by the time that happens.
Well, yeah, but I think a lot of our fan base is based in India, so they'll be enjoying the next World Cup coming to them. Not the one in 2017.
The way things are going, they're going to have every single World Cup in India. But that's a different for a different podcast.
Hopefully India wins a few of them as well.
Yeah, so it was a good World Cup. Some players retired. Do you want to talk about some of the... Do you want to say farewell to some of the players?
Well, I think Michael Clarke had a fitting finish to his career. You know, the last 6 months or so, he's been nursing a few injuries, and it was very important to him to come back and captain this team to a victory. I still think that if he didn't play, I'm sure George Bailey would have been a great captain and they would have won anyway. But it was good to see a great player go out with a fairy tale ending. There's been a bunch of players. If you look at Sri Lanka's team, they're sort of decimated now. I'm sure they'll unearth some new young talent to fill in for Sangakkara, Jay Wardner, and maybe even Dilshan. I'm not sure what the story is with him, but those are pretty big shoes to fill. I think Sangakkara peaked, you know, in his one-day career at the end of his career, which is kind of ironic. You know, there's been so many good players that we've come to love over the last 10 years or so, and it's going to be sad to see him go.
Yeah, I mean, Vettori is retiring, which is, he's been around the international calendar for so long. It's been great seeing the guy with glasses, you know, do so well. And if you look back throughout New Zealand's history, he's been integral towards it. At one point he was, you know, right down from coach to the key player, and did every role that New Zealand cricketer had. So it'll be sad no longer to see him on the international circuit. Even from New Zealand, Kyle Mills has also announced his retirement, who's been thereabouts in the ODI squad for a long period of time. Quite a few players are going to be playing the last World Cup. I don't think we'll see them again.
I think it's quite interesting. If you look at the main teams, most teams are losing one or two solid players that have been around for a long time. But India hasn't had a single player in their 11 that is stepping down, unless I'm not remembering someone. But
Dhoni, maybe.
Dhoni, possibly, but he hasn't really talked about anything. If you look at Pakistan, Misbah Ul Haq is stepping down, a guy who I think is very underappreciated by Pakistani fans. He's been the only guy who's really stood up when Pakistan collapses every second game. Shahid Afridi is gone. You know, he's been the most mercurial player possibly of all time. So it's going to be sad to see him go. You know, but we're going to move on, and I'm sure in the next World Cup we're going to have a whole new host of new superstars to support.
Yeah, there's one more player, Brendan Taylor. He's not retiring from cricket, but we might see him play international cricket for England. Maybe. Well, probably. But yeah, he's another player. It's kind of sad to see the way he went out. Not, I mean, his last innings was incredible, but in terms of the reason why he has to go, financial reasons, and it's an issue that hopefully the ICC look at. And because even like a player like Brendan Taylor, I'm not even sure if he's on an IPL team and things like that. There's not many other avenues that he gets money from, which is a shame. But yeah, we'll see how things go. One quick thing about Carl Mills. He's actually the second leading wicket taker for New Zealand in ODI history.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's he didn't play a game in the World Cup, did he?
No, he didn't. He didn't play a game. He was just in the squad.
Yeah, he's the second.
I feel kind of bad for him that he, you know, he was on a bench watching New Zealand make their run, and you know, he was the second highest wicket taker in New Zealand history.
Yeah.
Yet he was the guy carrying the drinks. So
yeah.
But, you know, he was been a very good player, Vittori has as well, and it's going to be sad to see those guys go.
There's a lot of other older players that we might not see. Like you said, Miss Powell Huck. I don't know if we'll see Grant Elliott again. You know, his one innings, basically that one innings will define his career, and it's great innings to have.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other older players, like we said, Shane Watson, Mitchell Johnson maybe.
Look at South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how many of their players are going to retire right now, but we can be sure to say Dale Steyn and Morne Morkel will make it for the next World Cup. So I think in 4 years from now we're going to see very different teams. Yeah. Apart from India, they might have the exact same team.
Imran Tahir as well. He's going to be moving. Well, I guess he's 35 at the moment, so I don't think he'll play another World Cup.
Yeah,
we'll miss his celebrations the most.
I don't know if you can count him out. The way he runs around the ground after getting a wicket, he looks in great form. So he looks in great shape.
Yeah, he's very fit.
So we'll have to see.
He probably
about
runs
that.
The most for a spin bowler on the field.
That's a good point.
Yeah. But, so if you could pick one highlight, Pralab, what would you say?
For me, it was the crowds. Just seeing ODI cricket and stadiums filled, you know, sort of top to bottom in a lot of the venues that we were at. So New Zealand's a really good example of this. And they have the advantage of having smaller stadiums a lot of the time. But it was great to see even minnow matches being packed to the decks and the support that the New Zealand team got. And even shifting across to Australia, like some of the big games like India, South Africa had 80,000 plus to those games. So it was just brilliant for me seeing the crowd so involved in Australia and New Zealand and the atmosphere that it created. For me, it was the crowd that was the main highlight.
And what about the low light, if you had to say one?
Low light would probably be some of the, I'd say the reaction from Bangladesh exiting the World Cup. So their president, who was a bit of controversy with the presentation of the World Cup trophy, which he was apparently meant to do in the ICC head Srinivasan did it instead. And now I think the Bangladeshi president has tendered his resignation. But for me, the low light was his commentary on Bangladesh losing. And I understand as a fan being really frustrated with how you lose. But when you're in an ICC official position, you need to step out of those shoes and become the person you are representing. And that's, you know, you are the ICC president representing the entire cricketing community, not just purely a fan of Bangladesh cricket. So for me, the reaction that Bangladesh had when they exited, and not Bangladesh, the team itself, but more, I think, the officials was pretty poor, and that was probably a low light in this tournament. And the second one would have been some of the high scores that we saw. Like, I don't think you should see that many 400-plus scores in tournaments.
For me, I'd say the highlight was the associates. I know there weren't that many upsets this World Cup, but it was just good to see Afghanistan and Scotland and UAE play. First of all, because it was good to see those guys get an opportunity. Guys like Kurram Khan and a few other guys in the UAE team are, you know, in their mid-40s, and this is their first opportunity to play a World Cup. So it was great to see those guys really get in there. And, you know, the game between Afghanistan and Scotland, for me, was one of the highlights as well. For the low light, I'd say the semi-final and the final. So, obviously, I'm talking about the India-Australia semi-final, which, you know, at least in my head, I know in all of our heads, we sort of hyped up to a, you know, to a point where we thought it was going to be a great match, and we even expected India to win. But, you know, India didn't deliver. They disappointed, and that was an anticlimax. And I was hoping to sort of offset that, the final would be great, but that was also a bit of a disappointment. I think at the end of the day, Australia sort of won this cup without a challenge, and that was a little bit disappointing. You know, I'm not a huge fan of Australia, the Australian cricket team, so it would have been great to see a team challenge them and wipe the smile off their faces. Getting a little bit biased here, but it would have been good to see a little bit more competition there in the final stages.
Yeah, for my highlight, I'm going to probably say New Zealand, their run. I think from start to finish. And I think even going there might have influenced that a bit too. Like, this is a country that's, you know, rugby heavy. Like, they love rugby. They're the, one of the best at rugby. And cricket's always been, you know, a second sort of sport. And it's a small country. And to see them just, you know, take up the sport. And when we were there looking at the fans, just how passionate they were. It's great to see. And the whole journey. And it's an unfortunate end that it came to with, you know, the finals being so one-sided. I think it... I wonder how much that fan support actually made a difference if, you know, they had the same crowd even from New Zealand in Australia. That might have made a difference. Because they were a team that sort of, you know, they always, like, made the most out of what they had. Each player sort of stepped up. And each, like, it seemed like, you know, Grant Elliott came to life towards the end of the tournament. But before that, you had a lot of other players stepping up. So it's really impressive to see that. And, yeah, of course, Grant Elliott, six at the end. Incredible. Probably my favourite game and one I won't forget for a long time, I don't think. Yeah.
I'm going to sort of break the rules here and bring in another highlight, another low light. I'm remembering it now while you're talking about it. There's been so many great moments.
I think, Gav, you need to remember that you're in your official capacity as Cricket Tonight host. You have to make sure you act properly and follow the rules.
I'd say another highlight was the semi-final between New Zealand and South Africa. This is the opposite of the India-Australia game. This is one of the best games I've ever seen in my life. You've got two teams who wanted it so badly for so many reasons. And it was really a fitting game. And you could see the emotion and the heartbreak on the South African faces after they lost the game. So that was definitely a highlight. I'd say another low light was the format of the World Cup. I think too much time... I know it's a little bit... It seems quite strange because I said the associates were a highlight, but I think more time should have been given to the top six to play amongst each other. I'm a big advocate of the Super Six format. I think, you know, it was sad to see India go undefeated then have one bad day and be kicked out of the tournament. It was sad to see a World Cup where India didn't play Sri Lanka and didn't play New Zealand. Those games would have been absolutely amazing to watch. So, you know, with a few tweaks here and there, you know, this World Cup could have been a lot better in my opinion. Even though it was great, I want to put it out there, I enjoyed this World Cup a lot.
Yeah, just one last one. The low light I'd probably have is probably touched on it, the high scores. The battle between bat and ball. I feel like the way it's progressing, like, you know, who would have imagined last World Cup that even in India, like, a score of 400 could be had. And we're playing in Australia, which is meant to be where bowlers dominate, New Zealand where bowlers dominate. But it seems like more and more things, it seems like as things go on, batsmen become, you know, the advantage is towards the batsmen more and more each time. So I hope they do put regulations around bats and find other ways to sort of even that up, because I don't like seeing such a, you know, heavily dominated side because then you're basically just watching the batting and you want to watch the batting and the bowling, really. So that's probably the one low light I probably had.
Yeah, I think the biggest scores were by South Africa. I think they had 2 400 plus scores. Yeah. So I think if there are any restrictions on batsmen, it should be on de Villiers. Just make sure he doesn't hit too many sixes.
Yeah. So we'll move on and we'll give you a special segment here. Gov's Cricket World Cup 11. Go for it.
Yeah, so I'm going to put it out there. I think the openers should be Shikhar Dhawan and Martin Guptill. I think Guptill obviously had that amazing 200, but even the game before that, he had a century. So, you know,
the official ICC 11 had Brendan McCullum as the opener. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the final game might have sort of made me forget what he did earlier in the World Cup. Like I was saying before, when he had a great game, New Zealand had a great game. But I still think Guptill sort of carried them in the more important part of the World Cup in the final few matches. So it's a tough call, but I would go with Guptill. And Dhawan is the other opener I'd go with. I think he was India's best performer, with the bat at least. Which is surprising. I think before the World Cup, if we said Dhawan was going to be India's best batsman, I think you would have all laughed at me.
He does tend to lift in the big tournaments. The ICC Champions Trophy was the best. He was the player of the tournament.
I still would have picked Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli, Dhoni, even Raina. Raina had a good World Cup as well, but I think Dhawan was a top guy. Which is, again, I keep bringing it up, but that semi-final, if he hadn't held out to Maxwell in the deep...
Yeah,
could be talking about India as a champion, but anyway, I'm getting off track now.
Get over it, guys.
it's been a week. Number three, I put Steve Smith. I think he's really blossomed this summer. He's arguably the best batsman in the world. That's a big call to make, but it's just hard not to say that looking at him bat. He's so comfortable at the crease and just has so much time. Do you guys agree with that?
I agree. I think he's an exceptional player. And it's always interesting because you see him shuffling around a lot. But it just means that he gets into all these great positions when the ball comes to him to hit the ball into angles where there's no fielders around. And right now, I'm going to look forward to seeing how he goes in England with the red balls that's swinging to see how he goes there. But so far, I'd agree. He's one of the best batsmen in form at the moment.
Yeah, I'd definitely agree with Steve Smith being the first choice. He's, as India can tell you over the last 6 months, he's an incredible batsman. One player that I think is a bit overlooked in number three position, it might sound a bit surprised, but I think Faf du Plessis had a very good tournament. And I thought he was a bit underappreciated. In that semi-final against New Zealand, he was a guy that carried them through during difficult times. And he had a good... He was like the third highest run scorer after Umla and De Villiers, maybe. I thought he had a very good tournament. And I wouldn't pick him as number one, but I'd just put him in the conversation.
No, that's a good point. I think if it didn't rain, for anyone watching that game, we can all agree that he would have made a century or gone beyond that.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. But I think it's always a hypothetical of what could have happened if it didn't rain.
My point was that, you know, the whole World Cup could be remembered very differently if there hadn't rained. But yeah, that's part of the game as well. We can't talk about that too much. But he definitely had a great tournament. I would put Steve Smith ahead of him.
Yeah, same.
Just because of his key performances in the final. Yeah. But good point. Number four, I'd put Sangakkara.
Yep, I agree.
Four centuries in a row, for a 37, 38-year-old who's calling his retirement. You know, it was sad to see him go out in the way he did against South Africa. He didn't have a great match. If he had a little bit more support, I'm sure he could have batted better and made a game out of it. But amazing tournament by an amazing player.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I think he was so incredible during his time. He just, every innings he played was, it was like typical Sangakkara, vintage Sangakkara. Like, the way he plays, the most classiest batsman maybe there is. So
just watching his cover drives is beautiful. Poetry in motion.
Like how late he plays the ball. Yeah, it's going to be missed. Yeah. I'm going to miss him.
I have Sangakkara in the team, not as a wicketkeeper though, which we'll get into later.
I don't think he keeps though.
Well, he doesn't.
He keep for Sri Lanka this World Cup. He did. Anyway, we'll continue. Yeah. Number five, De Villiers. He's the captain of the team. In my opinion, he had a great World Cup. You know, he in a semi final, he had a great innings. You can only wonder again if it didn't rain, how much more he could have got. I keep bringing it that. But he had a great tournament overall. He was, you know, those 400 scores. They scored two of them. He was a big part of that. South Africa did lose two key games in the group stages, one against Pakistan, one against India. In the second game against Pakistan, he did put up a fight, but in the first one, he got run out. So that just shows how important he is to the South African team mentally, and he had a great tournament.
Yeah, look, I agree. He had a very good tournament. Certainly, you could see the emotion on his face when that final six was hit against New Zealand. So he's had a good tournament. I think overall in the World Cup, he's amongst the top sort of 10 run scorers. So you can probably see Manton arguing for being there in the team. I still question, though, the games where South Africa lost, I think he could have done more in those games. And
against New Zealand?
Against New Zealand, against India, and against Pakistan. So they lost three games of cricket against the top nations, and he definitely could have done more in all three of those games. Sometimes it was out of his... Sometimes he just didn't have the support, but I think, you know, sometimes the great players and the really, really great players perform in those biggest games and find a way to will them their team through.
He did miss that key run out against New Zealand, and a couple of his fielding placements against New Zealand in the latter overs could be called into question.
Just on that pull up on that big game moment, for that reason, you can make the argument Grant Elliott should be in it. Grant Elliott's got two. Oh, he scored two vital scores at the number five position and won them basically the semi-final, and he was the only hope in the final.
Yeah, you can make the argument with him. I mean, you could. It depends on what you look. We're probably looking at like team of the tournament, so you're sort of adding all their group stages up together. But if you're looking at players who performed under pressure 11, that would be an entirely different team, I think.
It's true. He had a great game against...
And Elliott would probably be in there.
He would be in there. Definitely. I think looking at the whole tournament, I can't remember a significant innings he had before... the last few games. But yeah, those two innings were great.
But I mean, he stepped it up when he needed to, right?
Like, that's true. I can't remember what he did in the earlier stages.
Question. Like, should we value, you know, an 80-odd in a semi-final or, like, consecutive centuries against West Indies and lower ranked teams.
Yeah.
Which is more important?
Look, I think in terms of what's more important, I'd value the semi-final runs. Yeah. But when you're looking at a team of the tournament, a lot of teams don't get to play in those finals and play in those big moments. So I think you can't discount them entirely. So like players like Brendan Taylor...
Yeah, that's another one.
Wouldn't otherwise make any of these teams because they didn't play in any finals.
That's true. So, and speaking of Brendan Taylor, I'd put him in as number six. I think because Zimbabwe didn't make the final eight, he's gone overlooked a little bit. But he even now is one of the top scorers of this World Cup. You know, he had a great final match against India. He single-handedly kept them in the game, and it's going to be sad to see him go from international cricket because I think at 29 years of age, he definitely had another World Cup in him. And he has been and would have been a great leader for Zimbabwe moving forward.
Hmm. Yeah, I'd definitely agree with him. I'd have him in my list too. He was pretty exceptional and his final innings was electric.
Yep.
So, it was good to see it. Yeah.
At number seven, I'd put Glenn Maxwell. I think a few months before this World Cup, he was out of sorts and he was barely included in the side, but he turned it around. You know, he... along with McCollum and de Villiers, were the most explosive players in the tournament. When he was on, there's nothing anybody could do to stop him. You know, he looked great against great spinners like Ashwin, and you know he even scored a century down the order. So, and he was quite capable with the ball as well. He got a key wicket. He got Gupta out bowled in a World Cup final, so you can't forget that. So I think he's a great choice at seven.
Yeah, I mean any thoughts on other all-rounders? I think... Who are the other ones, Army?
I'd say Corey Anderson.
Corey Anderson, yeah. He had a really good tournament.
He was really, really... I'd probably pick him ahead of Maxwell. Just... He... Again, I might be one of those players... I might be one of the people that look at big performances more. And his 50 again in the semi-final was also crucial.
But it was backed up with a duck in the final.
It was backed up but with the duck. But he also did play in the group stages as well. Mm. He had a good tournament overall. And he's another kind of player. He's a bit like Maxwell in that explosive... nature that he has as well. So I'd probably pick him. And I think his bowling is a bit better as well. Like Maxwell is... I know Maxwell took the wicket of Guptill, but I think I can credit that to almost Guptill more. Although it was a good ball, but I thought Guptill would have been able to play that better. Yeah. But I think... I'd probably pick Corey Anderson because I think they rely on him to bowl 10 overs almost all the time. Or at least 8 overs. Maxwell, they spread out 20 overs between 3 bowlers. And it seems like... you know, they can get away with bowling Maxwell only 4 overs or something like that. So his batting is more what's him. So I think I view Corey Anderson more as a true all-rounder.
Yeah, I mean, maybe had a bit one from left field, but Dumini?
Yeah,
he had a good hat-trick. Start to the tournament. He had a hat-trick, obviously, in the semi, but quarter-final. But even at the start of the tournament, South Africa were 4 down, and he came in with Miller, I believe, and put on 200 runs. Yeah. There's been a few runs here and there where he's performed.
I think he'd be more suited for number 6. I think he was the one weakness for South Africa in that, you know, because he was batting at number 7, they really lacked a good fifth bowler. I know he got a hat-trick against Sri Lanka, but that was sort of an aberration for me. Against New Zealand, they were really lacking that fifth bowler, and he just wasn't good enough, in my opinion, to fill that slot. But yeah, I would definitely agree with Corey Anderson. You know, he'd be my 12th man, but I can easily see him getting into the 11. My 8, I was sort of tossing up over this one, whether it's going to be Ashwin or Tahir, but I ended up going with Vettori. You know, he didn't have a great final game. It looked like he was a little bit resigned and he was on his last legs. But, you know, I keep thinking back to that game against Australia in Auckland in the group stages. David Warner and Finch were getting away and he was the one to rein them back in. And he did that the whole tournament, really. He was just so effective. He doesn't spin the ball much anymore, but... he just bowls these weird sort of bowls that sort of swing a little bit and he varies his pace well and he's the most accurate spinner in the world and it's going to be sad to see him go.
Yeah, look, I'd say the two other alternatives were Ashwin and Tahir. Ashwin had a really good tournament containing and also picking up key wickets, but for me, Imran Tahir changed the course of games for South Africa many, many times, so I'd have him ahead of Vettori. He was, I think, the second or third leading wicket taker as well. And just the impact he had in the games and probably celebrations as well. Both them enough to, you know, bring me over the line from picking Vettori.
Mm. It's hard not to put Vettori in the team, but I might actually agree with Pralab in this one. Just because, if you told me before the tournament that Imran Tahir would be the leading wicket taker and leading bowler for South Africa, I'd say, you've got to be crazy. Like, but yeah, Tahir was incredible. Yeah. And... He really put everything into his performances, as you can tell, as we all know about him, how passionate he is. So it was good to see. But I also think Ashwin also kind of went under the radar here. He had a great tournament as well. He was, you could argue he was India's best bowler. He was containing and he took the wickets at the right time. So he had a great tournament as well. So
Didn't you once make a big call, Army, that Ashwin would be the leading wicket taker in the World Cup?
I think we've all made big calls that we could all go back on and talk about. So that's not
something we've spent a whole other podcast on big calls. Yeah, that was a great point. I think Ashwin, Vittori and Tahir are all neck and neck. I chose Vittori because he's a little bit better batsman than both of the other two guys. And the tail would be very long if you had Tahir at number 8. Because we know that all teams captained by de Villiers collapse. So it's good to have a longer, it's good to have a longer batting lineup. So I would put Vittori at number 8. Number 9 would be Mitchell Starc. Far and away the best bowler at this World Cup. He stepped it up in the World Cup final. The way he got out McCullum, McCullum is one of the best batsmen in the world, best hand-eye coordination out there, and he just embarrassed him. He, you know, the first ball he missed, second ball he tried to charge him down the ground, which worked so well against guys like Dale Steyn in the previous game. And the third ball, perfect in-swinging Yorker. I'm surprised he hasn't had a good test career so far. I know he's quite young. I know he's going to be the long-term replacement for Mitchell Johnson, but, you know, there's no reason to believe he can't turn into a great test bowler down the line. But he was incredible this World Cup and a well-deserved man of the tournament.
Yeah, look, I agree. And definitely he's going to be in the team no matter what. Regarding his comments about his test career, he has struggled a lot with the red ball. And for some reason, as soon as he gets that red ball in his hand, he loses a bit of his swing and his just his ability to ball to a plan. I think that's what he's lacking. In ODI cricket, people are used to attacking bowlers, and they necessarily play a lot of balls outside off stump versus test matches. You can choose to leave those balls, and then he ends up bowling on the legs and you get hit for 4 and batsmen just pick him off really quickly. So I think he's going to grow and develop into that role. But yeah, you're right, he's a logical replacement for Mitchell Johnson in 2 or 3 years' time.
Yeah, he had a sensational World Cup. Really just outstanding. The way he swung that ball was incredible. And he's just those in-swinging Yorkers he has. It's hard to play them, and just watching them, even live, watching them when we were there, it's really, really incredible what he does. And I don't think there'd be anyone that would leave him out of a World Cup team, to be honest.
Brendan McCullum would, because he wouldn't have to face him.
I think he averaged less than 10 with the ball this World Cup. Absolutely incredible. And he has an overall one-day average of 18.
Yeah.
And he's played enough games now where you can actually take that into account. So incredible. I'd put next in the lineup, I'd put Shami. I think he had a great World Cup as well. I think he's sort of in a similar space to Mitchell Starc. He's much better one day bowler than test bowler. I think he has to really work on his test game and bowl to a plan, because he bowls too many loose deliveries. But in the one day game, he seems to enjoy it more. He seems to really relish the attacking and fast paced nature of the game. And he had a great tournament. Didn't have a great match against Australia. He was another one of the Indian players that didn't really step it up in that final game. But it's hard to overlook the bag full of wickets he got. And remember, India bowled out 7 teams this World Cup, and he was a crucial part in all those performances.
Yeah, I agree. I'd have him in my team as well. He's had a really good tournament, and it's good to see an Indian fast bowler make a sort of ICC World 11. Not an official one, at least, but the Cricket Tonight one, at the very least.
Well, what's better?
This one clearly is going to be. He's going to be talking about this to everyone he talks about.
Definitely, we'll send him a trophy.
Number 11, Trent Bolt.
Yeah,
I think he was also a guy like Mitchell Starc. I was sort of thinking that if he had a great World Cup final performance, he could even win man of the tournament. But he didn't really step it up in the final game. You know, with a pace attack of Shami, Starc and Trent Bolt, that's a very imposing lineup. And fortunately, nobody will have to face that team, because it's quite a good team.
Yeah, I would agree with Trent Bolt. He was
exceptional.
He was incredible, especially in New Zealand. Unfortunately, he didn't step it up as much as I would have liked here in Australia. But, you know,
he's still the best bowler on the day, though.
He's still the best bowler on the day, yeah. And I don't want to put... I think it is a big deal, because New Zealand and Australia, as we witnessed, was it's almost like it's completely different conditions. Like, the grounds are so much smaller and it's so different there. Like, it really is an overseas game. So
seagulls in one and sheep in the other.
I'd say my 12th man would be George Bailey. No, in all seriousness, I was impressed by the way he handled the whole situation. I think if it was someone like Michael Clarke, you would have heard a lot of comments and back and forth with guys like Darren Lehman. But George Bailey, he took it well. You know, he captained the team in the first game. They smashed England, and then he didn't play a single game. And I was watching him very closely in the post-match celebrations, and he seemed the happiest out of all of them. I think it just shows a character and why he was picked as one day in 2020 captain without much experience. He's just a top bloke.
He had a really funny quote. It was something like, there's no better team. I wouldn't pick any other team to be sitting on the bench and watching the winning moments.
That's a good question.
And it's not a wonder his future in the team now. Is he going to step into that number four position that Clark has vacated, or is he still going to be a bench guy? Like, he'll be interested to see what his role is now.
He'll come in into Clark's spot pretty clearly. He was the best player in 2013, so he's definitely going to bring it back. I guess if your point is that he's going to be the 12th man, then I'd say the spiritual 12th man for India would be someone like a Rishi Dhawan, who took his omission from the World Cup squad ahead of Stuart Binney so well that you didn't hear any comments about him as well.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to pick a 12th man.
But to be honest, I'd probably pick someone like a bit left field, but maybe Mahmudullah from Bangladesh. He had a really good tournament. You know, had two hundreds and maybe 250s, so a decent tournament, and performed pretty well in a team that actually ended up doing really well.
Well, you brought up Rishi Dhawan, so I'm going to talk about him for a bit now.
We're finished, right?
I like to put Rishi Dhawan in my World Cup 11 for 2019 already. He's at number 7 now.
Yeah. Just speaking on Mahmudullah, were there any other players that sort of don't make the top 11, but we could still talk about, just quickly, I thought Rubu was also good from Bangladesh. He had some big crucial games. Moeen Ali, could you say? Although he got kicked out, it wasn't... Nah.
I don't think it was that good. Like, he was okay. He was better. I guess he was probably one of the best players in England.
The best player on a bad team.
Another guy, Wahab Riaz.
Great spell. Spell of the World Cup.
An overall good tournament. He had a good tournament. He didn't have a bad tournament.
He did.
So who knows if Pakistan could actually catch.
And if they had Mohammad Irfan, that could have been a different game as well. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
I actually think Pakistan, going back into the World Cup review, I think Pakistan have, quite a good team moving forward. It'll be interesting to see how their new captain performs. I don't really know much about him because he wasn't good enough to make the squad, but it'll be interesting to see them performing with Wahab and Mohammad Irfan and Mohammad Amir possibly returning.
Yeah, look, for me, Pakistan, it doesn't matter how much talent they have. They really just need to focus on the fitness and the basics in cricket. And it's good to see Misbah actually say that in his sort of closing comments, that Pakistan is behind every other nation when it comes to fitness and sort of performing with the basics of cricket. So I think if Pakistan have a real emphasis on that in the next few years, where they focus on running between the wickets, taking catches, bowling line and length, and just generally doing stuff that we all expect countries like Australia and New Zealand to do really well, that will do really, really well in future ICC tournaments.
Yeah, as long as they get their priorities right, it'd be good. Yeah. So I guess that brings us to a close.
Is that it? Done for cricket tonight for the World Cup?
No, it's quite emotional.
Quite emotional. This is the last edition of Cricket Tonight, the World Cup edition. We're not leaving. Just no more World Cup talk. So you can listen to this podcast over and over again. And just...
We will be back one day. We'll be back, I guess.
Not one day. We'll be back soon.
Soon, I guess. There's always cricket on.
Always cricket on, so we'll be talking about cricket. Whenever India are playing, we'll be following the series. And even in between, we might chuck in a podcast here and there.
Make sure.
To discuss.
We now have the email address we can...
Contact us on cricket.tonight6@gmail.com. That's cricket.tonight6@gmail.com.
And that 6 is a numeral, by the way.
Yeah, 6, the numeral, like a 6. Just a good way to finish off the email.
Hitting a 6, what McCullum will do in a semi, but not in a final.
What Grant Elliott did in a final. So, again, we just have a big thank you to everyone that's listened to the podcast, downloaded the podcast, mentioned the podcast, shared it, done anything. Please subscribe to us, review our podcast. If you subscribe to us, then it'll just automatically update whenever we have a new one out. So, yeah, again, we really appreciate the support. We look forward to meeting up and talking cricket again. As for now, Prabhab, take it away.
Plays out.
One last time for a while.
One last time.
He's the greatest.
of all time. Rohit Sharma.
Thank you, everyone.